The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Our introduction to mindfulness meditation. How many of you are here for the first time, didn't come last week? Well, quite a few of you. Okay. So, thank you so much. Perhaps we can start. For those of you who came last week, and if you tried the meditation at home, do you have any comments of what that was like, or do you have any questions about it? And so one of the things that's nice is to get a range of experiences, because a range of experiences is allowed.
It's hard to find time.
Hard to find time, yeah.
I was just quite aware. Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. I can't hear it. I was just quite aware of how active and discursive my mind is, and that it easily goes off into considerations about plans, issues of the day to come, and so I would bring it back to the breath. I guess I find when I relax for a while, my breath becomes very regular.
Uh-huh.
And so when I attend to it, it can get, I wouldn't say boring, but I mean, it's not changing much. So, you know, attending to something, keeping your attention on something that is constant is a little harder than something that has some attribute
that's
changing.
So 2 points. So the first point about, I guess some people would say when they first sit down to meditate, they realize their mind is out of control. Or the mind is like a waterfall, some people say, just all this energy, all this thoughts going on. Congratulations. That's the first insight of insight meditation. It's better to know that your mind is out of control than to have an out of control mind and not know it. Because if you know it, then you can start kind of taking that into account and work with it and, you know, bring it under some kind of, you know, tame it a little bit or get wise about it or find some way to relax. So it's actually a good experience to know, given that it was probably doing it anyway. That's one. And then you want to be patient, that things will change as you do it. And so, and what was the second?
Well, just that the breath, when
yes,
it becomes very regular, it makes it almost a little harder to maintain attention on it because, for an extended period of time, because it's not changing, it's constant, I get to know it.
So if you only focused on a fixed object that's unmoving, that's hard to keep your attention. Like if you do with your eyes, you would actually strain after a while. It'd be very tiring to try to keep a fixed focus on something which is unvariable. Part of the reason breathing works so well, not so well, part of the reason we use breathing is that it's a rhythmic oscillation of sensations, and that changing nature of sensation actually can make it more restful for the mind to be with. And maybe a little bit like watching a river go by, as opposed to just looking at a parking sign. You know, the river going by is kind of... So you have this, there's something about if the eyes can move and shift a little bit, it's easier for the eyes to be relaxed than if they just kind of hold themselves tight or something. So the same thing with the inner attention. The inner attention can start to relax more if it gently kind of follows something that oscillates and moves. Now, you're saying when it becomes regular, it becomes boring. That's only temporary. And a few things to say about boredom. Boredom is an activity of the mind. Nothing is inherently boring. And so as you learn to relax your mind, the boredom will go away. You have to be doing something to be bored. And it's an evaluation. It often involves being separate from your experience, being apart from it, sometimes with aversion, sometimes by just being distracted. Sometimes boredom arises because we have agendas and ideas of what's important, and this is not important. You know, just the breath. I mean, I have, you know, emails to answer. So boredom is an important thing to also come to terms with when you meditate. And now don't be very careful you don't believe your boredom. If you don't believe your boredom, then you're halfway there to become free of boredom. And as people settle in, the regularity of the breathing actually makes it easier to get more and more concentrated on it, because you get more and more familiar with it. And after a while, what shifts is with breath meditation, it isn't that the breathing is inherently interesting, but what makes it interesting is the kind of awareness that gets absorbed in it, pays attention to it. It can produce a tremendous amount of well-being and pleasure. Kind of like reading a really nice novel and you're absorbed. And the pleasure of the absorption is not necessarily the novel. The pleasure is being absorbed, or doing a craft, or doing something. And my kids think I'm very strange, because I used to really like taking some of the exams in college, because I would get absorbed. And I would leave the exam room, felt completely cleansed, like I dropped all my preoccupations, everything dropped away. I was just doing the exam, and I'd leave the classroom kind of like, wow, this is cool. So my kids think I'm strange. Maybe I am. And so the idea, you can do the same thing with breathing. You can kind of let go of your distractions, kind of really get into the rhythm of stay focused, and a tremendous sense of relaxation, well-being, absorption happens, and that in itself supports the mind getting more and more peaceful, which makes it more and more pleasant. So that's the carrot.
Thank you.
For you to get over your boredom. Okay? Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. Someone else?
Well, for me, it was a very sleepy week, and I was very diligent about sitting, but I felt like I missed a lot of the sitting because I was nodding off repeatedly. Yeah. So I'm like, oh, that was great. I slept through that. So sleep is something I contend with a lot with meditating.
Yeah, yes, I can understand that. I think it's probably fair to say that more Americans need to sleep than they need to meditate. I think there's a certain parts of our culture are sleep deprived culture, so sleep is very important to have a balanced life. And I don't know if it makes sense to spend too much time using meditation to get into some basic healthy balance when there are other ordinary human things like eating and sleeping that should be taken care of, exercising and things like that. And if you're able to sleep more and get more rest, that'd be good. If you can't, then there's other things you can do if you're sleepy in meditation. So here's a few things. One is meditate shorter, but more often. Like maybe you can stay awake 5 minutes. So instead of meditating 30 minutes at one time, do 5 minutes 6 times during the day. And you'll get some benefit that way. And that way you have enough alertness to kind of, those 5 minutes are meaningful. Another thing to do is to do, don't do sitting meditation, but do walking meditation. And we have a handout here on how to do walking meditation that Kate or someone, I or someone at the end can get for you. And you can get them to try. And some people actually walking meditation because it's kinesthetic, it's moving. It works better for them than sitting meditation. Some people, it's the opposite. But that will keep you alert. It's hard to fall asleep if you're, walking. There's also a tradition of doing standing meditation. And that also, people tend not to fall asleep because it's a long way to fall. I have a friend who was a monk in Thailand, and he says that he would meditate on the edge of a well because of his sleepiness.
So, not for me.
No. Don't suggest it. And so that's kind of more practical things you can do. The other thing that, but in terms of what mindfulness is in and of itself, as I said last week, when you do mindfulness practice, it's best not to think of anything as a problem and not be bothered by what goes on, but just all take it as something to fold into the mindfulness. And that includes sleepiness. So you want to kind of just... It's harder, but you want to just notice that you're sleepy. Notice that you're nodding off. And then get interested in that and begin exploring it. Look more carefully. Become like you're getting a PhD in what it's like to be sleepy. And to be really present for that experience. What happens around the eyes and the cheeks. And, where do you feel drained of energy? And what still feels energized? And things like that can sometimes bring interest and wake you up. And if it doesn't wake you up, at least you have the contentment of knowing you're doing the practice as sincerely as you can. When I used to work a busy job, and I would meditate when I came home around, I think it was 5:30, for 40 minutes. And every day for that year, at 5:30, I would nod off for the first 20 minutes. And then after 20 minutes, I was alert, and I had deep meditation. But I, you know, somehow I needed to kind of clear the air, clean the system from the day, the tiredness of the day or something. And maybe I was, you know, I don't want to admit that I was taking a nap, but and then, so those are some things. And finally, what some people will do is meditate with their eyes open. And sometimes the eyes open, that's enough stimulus to keep you alert. And for many people, the only time they close their eyes is when they go to sleep. So there's a habit of it. So to keep your eyes open, looking down at about a 45 degrees and not focusing on anything in particular. So those are some ideas.
Thank you.
A lot of ideas, sorry. Yeah. Someone else, right behind you.
I've been meditating on this all day long. I have four W's.
A little closer, because my hearing.
I have four W's.
Four W's.
Walking, water, weed, and wine.
Mm.
And I've been meditating on, is this helpful for my body, my mind, and my spirit?
Uh-huh.
And I'm getting the consciousness that all is right with me.
Mm. Nice.
And that I should focus on that. That if it's healthy for my body,
uh-huh,
my mind, and my spirit,
great,
then I should focus on that.
Nice.
So I want to hear your thoughts on that.
I think it's very nice. I think that's one of the directions this kind of meditation is going to. Because as with mindfulness, we start learning eventually, and we'll talk about this in later weeks, we start learning to pay attention to what goes on, our self-talk, the inner talk. And many people have self-talk that and sometimes internalized from messages from society that something's wrong with them. But just like boredom is an activity of the mind, that negative kind of self-talk is also just activities of the mind, ruminations of the mind. And as we learn about that, we learn it's not necessary to have those thoughts. Part of what meditation can do is to drop those away. And then without those negative thoughts, we start realizing that there's something about being alive and being present where there's nothing wrong with us. And it's very healing.
Thank you. God bless.
Great.
Buddha bless.
Thank you. So maybe one more, and then we'll move on today. Over here on your left.
I've been trying to practice acceptance all week, and I find that when I meditate, it's pretty easy. The thoughts and emotions come up, and I'm able to detach myself from them, but still accept them. And I'm finding that the more I accept my negative thoughts and emotions, the less power they have over me, and the less the less they end up holding on, because when I resist them, they become stronger.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And so that's beautiful, wonderful that you're discovering this. And if you do this meditation for a while and you really get into it, you'll discover something a little bit interesting about this. At some point, even accepting them is too much. Neither resistance nor acceptance. And what you come to is a deeper equanimity, where it's okay just to let them be, but they don't run you, they don't affect you, they're just there as phenomena, and you don't need to do anything because you're not being affected by them. So you don't have to accept them.
Wow.
Because you're not for or against them. Just, oh, there it is.
Wow. Thank you.
So that's the, you know, in this for this meditation, that's kind of like, start with your acceptance. That's like a important stage. And then at some point you find that you don't have to do that anymore.
Thank you.
Great. So, this idea of self-talk and the idea of the thoughts we have, our thinking has a big impact on us. And we don't just often think innocently, but we have thoughts, and the thoughts can affect us. They can weigh us down and affect the, you know, our relationship to what goes on around me. So, many years ago, I was teaching a meditation retreat with some colleagues, other meditation teachers, and some of them were 49er football fans. And it was back way less long ago when the 49ers were like a really hot football team. And so I didn't know much about football and at all, really, very little at that time. But we would be teaching this retreat, meditation retreat, and they would, because of important football games, they would go into the teacher quarters and be watching these games. Everyone's meditating, and the teachers are watching football. Don't tell anyone. So I'd be sitting there watching, and one of the teachers, a mindfulness teacher, had the mute. So when the commercial came on, he would mute the TV. It seems like a reasonable thing to do, and we would talk. And then the commercial would end, and the football game would start again, but he would not unmute it. And since he was a mindfulness teacher, I figured he was mindful that this was the case, that there was no sound coming off the TV. So we would sit, we'd turn and watch the TV. And we'd watch the game, and I knew just enough about football to know that these guys, they line up, and they fall down. And then once in a while, someone kind of seems to get loose and goes across these lines, and I feel kind of happy for him, but then someone comes over from the side and jumps on him, and then that's too bad. So that's kind of, it's something, right? But then, at some point, my friend and my colleague unmuted the TV, and I was struck by how different the experience was of football on TV with the sound of with the sound coming. The big difference was we had a commentator who was talking us through what was going on, and that commentator was excited. And it wasn't just, oh, look, they fell down, it's too bad. But it was like, oh, you know, he's at the 50, he's at the 40. You know, and I could feel myself wanting to be on the edge of my seat. It's so exciting. And I realized that my experience of watching the football game was entangled with the commentary I was receiving. It's like a movie scene, idyllic forest, beautiful forest, peaceful scene with a path. And it just seems so like a park-like and nice and peaceful. And then the ominous music. And your hair stands on end. You know something terrible is going to happen. So we live making commentary about our experience. We provide mood music for our experience. And it's not innocent. But we make commentary, and it affects our experience of what's happening. So I spilled the water here today, and I could just be all kinds of commentary. I'm a mindfulness teacher, I'm a klutz, and what do people think of me, and I should go back to kindergarten mindfulness, and, what am I thinking, and I don't know anything, and I could tell myself all these stories, and by the end of the class, I'm just a mess. Or I could not have any stories, just the water spilled. It's unfortunate. I'm grateful for the people that dried it up some, and keep it really simple, without this heavy commentary. But some people don't recognize they're making commentary. They live in the commentary, and so it has a big impact on their experience of what's going on and themselves. So one of the things that we're trying to do with mindfulness meditation is to be able to see the difference between a direct experience and the commentary. So, for example, something as simple as being with the breathing, just breathing in and breathing out. The chest moves, the air goes in, the air goes out, like that. But then, you know, we're in, you know, post-New Age California, where they have ideas about deep, relaxed, full breaths, and that, you know, we're supposed to really be into this, you know, and we certainly shouldn't control our breath, and we shouldn't have a shallow breath. It should be some... And so we start feeling our breathing, and wow, my breathing is tight, it's shallow, this is embarrassing, I must be a meditation failure, this must mean I shouldn't do meditation, this means that probably I've had too difficult a life, and my parents treated me badly, and my roommate didn't clean up the dishes, and my roommates never clean up the dishes, and I seem to always choose wrong roommates. And I really need to get help, but I can't get help because I can't afford a therapist, and I can never afford a therapist, and this is really hard. So I hear that I can learn to meditate, and it's free, and then I realize I am meditating. You know, the mind goes on these byways and highways and gets lost in commentary, and it can make a huge difference that we do this, but. To see, oh, there's the commentary, and the breathing is just shallow and tight. Just, oh, shallow, tight. And it's possible because we separate the two and see one is the experience and one is the commentary, to not live in the commentary, to not necessarily automatically believe it, but even let it go or let it kind of fade away into the distance. And so what we're trying to do in mindfulness is see that difference and then learn to stay with what we call is the direct experience. Just what's happening. We will make commentary about stuff. It's okay, but you don't have to get caught in it. You can just let it drift by, especially if it's not useful. If your mind says it's boring, just let it go. You know, just don't get entangled with that. Just stay with the breathing. Stay with what's going on. So that makes sense? So we're going to do a meditation. And those of you who are new, I think you can follow along okay. And and as we do it at various points, I might say something about, you know, notice if you have any commentary about what's going on. Some of you might notice you have commentary about something which is not going on. You know, something other places, other times. But just notice what goes on and see if you can make that distinction, separate out the two, so you can come back to your direct experience that I'm pointing to. So, to begin meditating, it's useful to take an alert posture. So maybe sitting up a little bit straighter than you normally would. And gently close your eyes. And to help you really to arrive here, to connect to yourself directly, it can be helpful to take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Perhaps even considering that deep in-breath as a chest and the shoulders move, it's kind of like a massage from the inside. And that as you exhale, you're relaxing a bit, softening a bit into your body. And then after a few deep breaths, let your breathing be normal, with no special effort to breathe any particular way. Whatever way you happen to be breathing is fine. It's also helpful at the beginning of a meditation to scan through your body to see if there's any easy places of holding tension that you can relax. Perhaps you can soften your face, around the eyes, your jaws. Maybe you can soften a bit in your belly. Perhaps your rib cage and center of your chest can relax. Perhaps relaxing or softening around the shoulders. Perhaps the pull of gravity in your shoulders can ever so gently help them to settle. After having kind of doing this setup procedure, then gently become aware of your breathing. Becoming aware of how your body experiences breathing. Perhaps finding that place in your body where it feels the easiest or clearest to feel your breathing, your body breathing. If it's difficult to feel your breathing, you could put your hand on your belly or your chest so you can feel the movement. And as you're sitting here, attending to your breathing, is there any commentary about what's happening? Any stories or evaluations or judgments, concerns that are swirling around? And if there is, recognize that that's distinct from the actual experience of breathing. And perhaps you can let go of your thoughts and let yourself experience the simplicity of just breathing. Noticing how the experience of breathing in is different than the body's experience of breathing out. Different sensations come into play. Perhaps as you exhale, letting go of your thoughts, your commentary, and let go into the experience of the body breathing. As you exhale, perhaps softening the grip that you have on thinking, softening the mind, the direct experience of breathing can include the movements of the chest and the belly, can include sensations of pressure and the release of pressure, it can include the sensations of air going in and out through your nostrils. And if you think there's any problems for you right now, that's commentary. You're welcome to think that. But see if you can let the commentary move to the side. And in the center, just be with your breathing. In mindfulness practice, nothing needs to be a problem. It's just something to be mindful of, to know, to notice. And then begin again with your breathing. And then before we end this short meditation, take a few moments to reflect if you noticed or learned something about the difference between the direct experience of what's happening in the moment and your commentary about it. And then to end this sitting, you can take some deep breaths, two or three deep breaths again. Feel your body. Connect to your chair or the floor. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So was it, for some of you, was that a helpful distinction between direct experience and commentary? Anybody would like to say a little bit of how it was helpful or what you learned from that?
Hello?
Yeah.
So I've been meditating like for a month and something and struggling a lot with commentaries about how am I meditating, am I doing it right? And this is like exasperating because it's like once again, another day, another day. And it was helpful because the explanation, because it was like, okay, I just realized that I'm starting and this is what it's about right now, like commenting about this and trying to go back to the breath. So maybe, hopefully.
Great. So in your previous meditation, you were caught up in the commentary, but now that you understand it, there's some hope for you. Great. Thank you. Someone else? You let go of all your commentary? There's nothing to say? It was that easy?
I noticed I had a lot of...
If you use the mic, please.
I seem to have had a lot less of it just now than I did when I meditated this afternoon.
Ah.
I don't know if it has anything to do with being with a bunch of people.
Uh-huh.
I didn't seem to have too much this particular time.
Sometimes meditating with other people, there's more kind of momentum to be engaged and not be distracted. Sometimes maybe because once you highlight something like commentary, it gets shy. It kind of recedes. Some things operate the best when they're not noticed. So a lot of the kind of negative self-talk, for example, is often works best if we don't really clearly, look at that, there's negative self-talk. Wow. That, wow, a lot of things don't survive. Wow. Very well. Okay. So one more, and then I would...
I feel like I don't have a lot of self-talk, but maybe more feelings.
Great. So, yes, you don't have to have commentary. It's easier without it. So that's nice. And so feelings, emotions, they sometimes provide the mood music. And so sometimes they cast a big impact on our experience of the moment. Sometimes being connected to feelings makes it easier to get into the meditation because there's less distraction. They can be pull us in. So we'll see how it is for you. Next week, we'll talk about emotions. Okay. So the main theme for this today is mindfulness of the body. And so I spent many years training in Buddhist monasteries and in this country, in Japan, in Thailand, in Burma, practicing in different Buddhist traditions. And one of the surprises for me was the tremendous emphasis that Buddhism gives on being embodied, being connected to your body. And a lot of the training, it's not explained that this is what you're doing, but a lot of the monastic training is training to help you get into your body, to be present in your body, to experience your life through your body. And I think it's probably fair to say that for many people, modern culture like we have around here works very much to get people out of their bodies. I think the more we're involved in screen time, for many people, the less they're connected to their bodies. And, you know, there's all kinds of physical difficulties that are coming up in people sitting at, you know, doing screen posture, walking down the street on screen posture. And, you know, and so, and there's a way that keeps us in our heads. I noticed that for myself, if I spend a little bit too much time on the web looking at different websites, I start feeling this kind of swirling, active energy, agitated energy in my head, in my head, and I associate it with an energy that, I call it searching energy. My search engine is on, or wanting energy. It's like, oh, let's go to the next one. Let's click on this. Let's see what's here. And it's not a very healthy thing for me. And I feel like it brings me up into my head, and I'm not really so aware of my body. So if this is true for you, mindfulness is meant to be an antidote. Because a lot of what mindfulness is actually bodyfulness. Because awareness is not only a mental thing. They have all these nerves throughout the body, sense nerves that pick up sensations. And, you know, our body is, you know, every, you know, centimeter, every little millimeter of our skin, our body, probably has some kind of nerve ending that picks up stimuli. And it's a way, sensing is a kind of awareness. And so to be able to live in the sensing gives us access to a much more holistic, fuller sense of what's going on. And it also gives us a greater intelligence because it gives us greater information. If the only information we're processing is what we think about, we're actually just a little segment of what human beings are capable of processing, taking in, intuitings, understanding. So, you know, a lot of my understanding comes from what I feel in my body. My body gives me the information that my brain then makes sense of, as opposed to, you know, just trying to think my way through things. So the idea of kind of learning to kind of rest, be at home in the body, and feel like the body feels like a good place to be, for some people is quite foreign to them. There was a magazine article I saw some years ago, and the title was The Body, Friend, Foe, or Total Stranger. And there are not that many people who see their body as their friend. Some people see it as their foe, as their problem. Some people have all kinds of problems with their body, a lot of commentary about their body. And some people, they don't even know they have a body. You know, the body is just this kind of unfortunate thing that moves your brain around. You know, and pretty soon, it'd be nice if they had, it's be treated like the original kind of driverless car, you know. Or something, you know, it just kind of does its thing, and sometimes just gets in the way a lot. So, but to really kind of live in the body, to wake up in the body, and there's a Buddhist teaching in some traditions that the ideal in Buddhism is to wake up, to be enlightened. And there are some schools of Buddhism say you don't wake up and get enlightened in your mind, you wake up in your body. It's that important, this idea of body. So So it's a beautiful thing to discover the body, to enter into it and kind of wake up there and discover the richness that's there. To do so, it helps to not have a lot of commentary, because then we're back up in the head. It kind of keeps us removed from the experience of the body. And so to learn to kind of dip into the body, or to kind of to sense the body from the body's point of view. And I like to, when I give instructions, to say things like, be with the body's experience of breathing. Because so many people are watching their breathing from the control tower. And the control tower is okay, but, you know, it shouldn't really be in control. When I say the body's experience of breathing, some of you might be perplexed when I say that, but the idea is, you know, the way it senses and feels and the sensations of the body and how the body kind of senses change and movement and pressure and all these things. So I would like to do a little exercise with you about, has to do with learning about how to bring mindfulness to the body. And you can put yourself in meditative posture if that makes it better for you, more attentive. Or you can just, if you want to not do that, you just close your eyes. And maybe take just a couple of breaths, deeper breaths, settle in, relax into your body. Maybe as you exhale, let go of your thoughts a bit. And now, can you bring your awareness, attention, into your right hand? And give yourself a chance to experience your right hand with the sensations that are there, the feelings that are there. The back of the hand. The palm of the right hand. The fingers, feeling your right hand, there might be tingling, vibration, sensations of contact if your hand is touching some part of your body. Pressure, softness, hardness. Temperature, warmth and coolness. And not thinking about the hand or commentary about the hand. But how does the hand experience itself? The direct experience the hand has. And the direct experience is meant to be the simplest way in which you experience the hand. Whatever way it is, it's fine. Feeling your right hand. And perhaps with your eyes closed, in some kind of way, there's no sharp boundaries of the hand. Hand has no sharp shape, maybe, with the eyes closed. Just a variety of different sensations that come and go, that are there. Tingling, warmth, vibration, coolness, pressure, heaviness. Perhaps relaxing your mind a bit. So you're not trying too much to feel the hand, but you're allowing yourself to feel the hand. Now shift your attention to that part of your body where you most clearly feel your breathing. And it isn't that you're specifically going to focus on breathing, but rather feel the sensations there in that part of the body. Vibration, movement, warmth, coolness, pressure, tightness, looseness, heaviness and lightness. Not straining to be aware of your breathing here, but allowing yourself to feel this part of your body. So that as you feel it, the sensations there become alive for you in a way that they wouldn't be if you were distracted by something else. Now one more time, now let your attention, allow your attention in a gentle, allowing way to become aware of the strongest sensation that's in your body right now. Whatever you think the strongest sensation is, in the same way that you felt the hand, allow yourself, without commentary, to feel the sensations that are there in that strongest area. Let them reveal themselves to you. And experiment with trying to be present for those sensations without being for or against them, but simply allowing them to come to awareness. If it's helpful, you can breathe with the strong sensation, breathe through it. Noticing any commentary. Let that fall to the side. So you keep a simple, allowing awareness. If the strong sensation goes away, find the next strongest in the body. And then to end this meditation, you can take a few deep breaths again, getting yourself ready to open your eyes. When you're ready, you can open your eyes. So the exercise was to bring mindfulness and bring attention to these three different areas, to your hand, which I was hoping would be a relatively neutral place. This isn't so that the case for everyone, but maybe for a good percentage of you, just to feel the hand in a neutral thing. Then to feel the area of your breathing, with the idea maybe that some of that way in which you felt the hand could translate to how you felt that area of your breathing. Maybe it's a simpler way than how you were doing it before. And then to find the strongest sensation in your body. If I'd ask you to go to the strongest sensation first, the old habits of how to respond, react, some of you probably was painful sensations. And the old habits of how you normally react and comment maybe would automatically have been triggered. But in this step by way, I wondered if you had a different way of being with the strong sensation you normally would. So I wonder, what was it like to kind of be mindful this way of the strong sensation? Was it interesting, or did you learn something, or was it different than normal, or what? Anything. And I'd love to get a range of comments. Yes, she'll come with the mic.
So one of the things I noticed is I don't have any pain in my hand. So it was a little hard to feel the pressure and be alert about it. Mm-hmm. And then when you directed me to the stronger sensation, I went right to where my shoulders are tight. So it was interesting in that respect. I'm glad you did the hand first.
Uh-huh. And were you then with your shoulders in a different way you think you normally would have been?
Well, I think I was thinking about, wow, you know, how the mind goes to the place where it's hurting first. I think that was kind of the insight, was that, you know, we're not noticing the parts of our body that are doing okay. We're noticing the parts of our body that aren't doing well.
Yes, we often do this. We have preferential attention. But the reason some of the motivation for the preferences are things like fear, our imagination, you know, that, you know, this means that, this is going to, I'm going to be a cripple, and this is terrible, I'm not safe. And we have all these commentary and ideas and beliefs that predispose us to be, zero in on the challenges. But it's a biased understanding. And if we want to kind of become whole, we don't want to be biased in how we divide up our experience or how we look. So we slowly, with mindfulness, we learn to open up more and more. But I'll say more about this strong experience. But if someone else would make some comments, that would be great.
I find that when you stay with the stronger feeling or the discomfort, that it's not static. It actually moves and morphs and changes.
Great. And seeing that, was it easier to be with it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I was just kind of fascinated by it.
So. Yeah, it can get more and more fascinating if you can really go in there and see how it changes and morphs. And it is not static. What makes a strong sensation static is when we see it through the lens of our commentary. Someone else? Yeah, in the front, if you can pass the mic here.
Similar to what was just said, I thought it was really interesting. I can't remember exactly the words that you used to transition when you said to go from the stronger sensation to the next strongest sensation. I think then you said you might find that the first strongest sensation is not as strong as it was before. And as soon as you said that, it was difficult to discern which actually came first, because it actually held true.
The first one, it decreased in intensity.
It decreased in intensity.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that can happen when we bring careful attention to discomfort or strong sensations. Sometimes they decrease. But sometimes they increase. And the task of a mindfulness meditator is just to stay mindful as it is. Be curious. Oh, and watch it. Oh, here it's getting weaker. Here it's getting stronger. Without the commentary. Oh, this means that pretty soon I'll have to go to the hospital. You know. So, mindfulness of the body. So so here comes the core instructions for up to this point. So the way I teach meditation is to sit and meditate with the breathing. The breathing is kind of like a home base. Some people call it the anchor to the present moment. To keep coming back to the breathing, breathing meditation, mindfulness of breathing is very helpful in many, many ways. It's a multi-dimensional phenomena. You can spend your whole meditation career just meditating your breath and have a wonderful career, wonderful time. But so we teach it here as the home base. But we don't limit ourselves there, because the goal in the meditation I'm teaching is to learn how to have this careful attention to all dimensions, all areas of our life. And so we can enter into all areas of our life with a kind of a new way that's more beneficial, more clean, less reactive, and more freeing. So we sit with the breathing, but sooner or later, there'll be some strong sensation in the body which is more compelling than your attention to the breathing. Now, if you try to stay with the breathing then you set up a tension between your attempts to stay with the breath and this compelling sensation which is calling for attention. And so we don't stay with that tension. What we do is we let go of our attention to the breathing. And just like you brought your attention to your right hand, you would bring your attention to that strong sensation, that compelling sensation. And you would experiment with just feeling and being with it, being mindful of it in a simple way, and being with it. In the process of that, you might learn a lot about yourself. You might learn a lot of the commentary, a lot of the reactions, the way you're for and against, the way you're afraid, the stories you tell about this means that, my hand's going to fall off if I do this anymore. It's all kinds of things that go on. The strong aversion you have to discomfort, the beliefs you have around discomfort. Discomfort means I'm a failure. So all these things that we do, this extra. And so nothing's a problem for mindfulness. It's just more information, more things to see. And as we see how this works better, the idea is just come back very simply to the direct experience. And so then you feel that part of your body. In terms, I say strong sensation, it can be an unpleasant sensation. It can also be a strong, pleasant sensation. Some people, when they meditate and they get really settled in and get kind of concentrated, there's a lot of really very, very pleasant sensations that can arise and occur. And so for some people, some of the most pleasant things they experience in their life comes when they meditate. So far from boring. It's really quite something to experience it. But it doesn't have to be that way. It's not like right if you have that and not right if you don't. It's just there's all these options. And if it's a strong sensation, then bring your attention to that strong sensation and just explore it, be with it. Once it feels well acknowledged, like you felt that you've been there enough with it, then you have a choice to either continue if it's compelling and engaging, you feel like you're present with it, or you can go back to your breathing. If it then returns as being compelling, then you go back to experience it again. If you're with a strong sensation in your body for a while, and then maybe it begins to decrease, but then a different strong sensation comes up that's compelling, more than the breathing, then go there. And someone might spend a whole meditation session never on the breathing, because the body is speaking. All these things are going on. There is a school of this mindfulness meditation where one of the core practices they have is only paying attention to breathing. And they do something that's called a body scan. And some of you have probably done that if you've done a mindfulness-based stress reduction course. Some of you done that? And there you systematically go through your body just to feel the sensations in one place, move it to the next, move it to the next, move it to the next. And the process of doing that, different parts of the body begin to wake up. Parts of the body that are numb, that we're disconnected from, that we've ignored, that are kind of psychologically asleep. And so the body starts feeling more alive and vibrant and full. And this is part of the integration process that the mindfulness is part of. So one school, they do it systematically. In our school, we don't do it systematically. We stay with the breathing, and then when something compelling happens in the body, then we go and be with it and wake it up or be present for it. And slowly over time, it can seem kind of random that different parts of the body speak up and say, here, now's the time for this part. Now's the time for this part. And it allows for kind of a natural or organic or your own personal inner process to unfold about where you bring your attention to in your body. It's almost as if your body knows better than you where your attention should go. And there's a very profound process of sometimes healing, sometimes relaxation, sometimes waking up that happens that the body will actually guide you and teach you about. It's very common for people to have judgments about discomfort, for example. They're tense in my shoulders and something's wrong. If only I wasn't tense, then I can meditate. In our school of meditation, it's time to do mindfulness of the shoulders. The body knows, it's telling me. Now it's time to be aware of that tension. And you do your time being aware of it until it's no longer compelling. And you try to have a quiet mind. You try to be in this kind of quiet, calm, just know this. Very simple. And then, and whenever you want, you can come back to your breathing. Sometimes when there are strong things going on in meditation, and it's hard to be with it, sometimes the breathing is kind of a friend. And you can come back and just be with your breathing and kind of breathe with the experience that's strong, breathe through it. And sometimes the rhythm of breathing, the oscillation of breathing, sometimes can keep us from getting caught up in our reactive mind. And it can just make it easier to be with something that's kind of strong. So that's one option you have. And the final thing I'll say about this mindfulness of the body thing is that sometimes it's helpful in a very soft, quiet mind to note or label the experience we're having. So, for example, if your knees hurt while you meditate, sometimes if you just recognize it, acknowledge it, oh, that's pain, that's burning, that's stabbing. Something about the acknowledgement of it sometimes creates a little more space around it, or a little more distance, or a little bit more acceptance. Unless you say, pain, it's like your inner voice just like is, aversive or something. But if you say it in a calm way, oh, there's pain. People who like to do this mental noting, they find it creates a little bit more anchor. They're able to acknowledge it, be there more fully with it. They're less likely to get caught up in the commentary if they have this one word kind of note for it. Make some space around it, more distance. And it also is interesting to avoid saying my pain. As soon as you say my pain or my knee hurts, once you get into this kind of more sensitive to mindfulness, how it works, you'll notice that when you say my, it's a kind of a commentary. It's accurate enough, but actually you're more likely to hurt more if you say my. There's something my, me, myself, and mine is a very powerful commentary, which is needed less often than you would believe. Just be pain, just be pleasure, just be, just recognize it. So the mental noting is optional. But some people find if they do that, it's a little bit easier. So the core practice is stay with the breathing. If something in your body is more compelling, then let your attention go there. Be with it as long as it's compelling or as long as it feels like it's good to acknowledge it. And then come back to your breathing. And be content to stay there until something else becomes compelling. And so it might be that your attention is moving during the course of the meditation, but that can be very good mindfulness. You're just being mindful of different things. And the advantage of moving your attention to where it's compelling is you don't set up a tension between different things that are, you know, where you should be and what's calling for attention. Does that make sense? Slowly over time, if you keep doing this, different parts of your body will speak up, and you'll find yourself kind of beginning to open up and relaxing. And as you relax, you open up even more. The sensing, the flow of sensations, the flow of energy in your body will become more vital and actually start feeling better and better to be living in your body rather than living somewhere above your body. So I'd like to do one more meditation, relatively short, but not right away. So first I want to give you a chance to ask some questions about this mindfulness of the body thing. Practice including the body as part of your meditation. Any questions or comments? Yes, all the way in the back. Could we pass the mic all the way to the back row? Oops.
Yeah, I have a question about images.
Yes.
That arise when you are meditating. You know, seems like my mind needs to be visualizing things.
Yes.
And that could be, in a way, distracting.
Yes.
I want to characterize it like that because it's kind of replaying something that I've seen in TV or whatever. So what do you think about that? What we should do or how do we deal with that?
Yeah, it's common. Some people think more in images and they visualize. Some people think more in words. And so it's important to see how it is for you. And so it's great that you notice that. That's considered part of the mindfulness. In 2 weeks, when I talk about mindfulness of thinking, I'll give more specific instructions for that. For now, I'm glad you see it. Just recognize it. And you might even use a mental note saying, imagining or visualizing. And for now, just let go of it and go back to your breathing. And what's best at this point in this 5-week course is keep it simple and just keep coming back to your breathing and your body. And try to really kind of explore and be in your body. Kind of like your body's a stranger. And for this next week, you're going to try to just discover and explore and sense and feel. Stand in the supermarket line and just kind of like forget about the National Enquirer. Inquire into your body, you know, and just feel and sense what's going on. If you have half a chance someplace, nothing's going on, don't be bored. Instead, kind of go into your body, see what's going on, discover your body. I'll give you one body story, because I now have a strong habit to keep coming back to my body, just notice what's going on. It's been so helpful in my life. I'll give you one story that I thought was so fun when I did it, when it happened. Was when I was a graduate student, I needed to go back in the old days when books were still being read. I needed to get a very special book, rare book I was here on the peninsula, so I had to go to this UC Berkeley campus to get it. It's a big hall to go over there. So I went over there, and they were supposed to have it on the shelf, but it wasn't there. So I went to the librarian and asked, you know, this book, it's supposed to be on the shelf, I need it for my research. And they said, well, it's not there. You know, I guess we don't know. But I said, but maybe someone's turned it in, maybe something's going on. And the person wouldn't pay any attention to me. But I come all this way for this book, can't you look for it or something? And so I was getting a little bit, you know, passionate maybe, to say it politely, about, you know, this thing. And so finally the librarian said, okay, I'll go look. So at that point, only at that point, did it occur to me, let's check in what my body's doing. I was leaning over the counter. in a tense way. It would have been good if I'd been mindful a little earlier. But in the, at least I saw it then, and then I can come back and rest. And I find that over and over again, by being in our body, it's an early warning sign of how we're holding ourselves, where our attention is, how we're afraid, how we get tight, pull back. It's a wonderful early warning signal of things that sometimes, you know, you're not going to catch quick enough if you're just busy doing your life. The body is a phenomenal thing to kind of tune into, and just many, many layers of learning. When we talk about mindfulness of the body, we actually talk about mindfulness of all the senses. And one of the senses is hearing. And some people actually find it very relaxing to do what's called listening meditation. In fact, for some people who have difficulty with breathing, people have asthma or people have had some kind of like trauma, like people who've almost drowned, sometimes they find it very hard to do meditation on the breathing. And so we'll give them a listening meditation to do. Sometimes when you're meditating, your neighbor's dog could be barking, or they're playing really scratchy music really loud, or banging against their walls, and who knows what those neighbors are doing. And so a common idea would be, I can't meditate if there's all this noise. My neighbor is ruining my meditation. I was on the brink of enlightenment. And then they started banging. The banging is a distraction, it's wrong. In the mindfulness meditation, there's no such thing as a distraction. Rather, it's just one other thing to fold into the mindfulness. So if the noise starts happening from your neighbor, that becomes compelling. Then we let go of the breathing and we do a listening meditation. And we use contentedly, that's a completely valid place to be in the present moment. You're in the present moment with a dog barking. So I'll tell you a story. I practiced in Burma with one of the great meditation masters of the last century. And he was a bit of a... Different meditation masters have different personalities. Some are what, you know, what maybe some people expect meditation teachers to be, you know, relaxed and accepting and gentle or something. But he was not. He was like, you know, he's a warrior, and you know, like he would lift his eyebrows and like everyone would cower. Oh, you know. But he was a great master and a great practitioner. Different personality than, and. Anyway, so he had this kind of, you know, determined way. So when he was a young monk, he was started through his meditation. He had a roommate in his little monastic cell, a small room. And they were both there supposed to be meditating on retreat. And he, being this determined guy, he would get in bed and he would sit up and meditate into the night. His roommate would go to bed early. And I think he was a little bit indignant, you know, this guy's, but he would start snoring. And he would be really indignant, like, this guy's interrupting my meditation, it's a distraction, how could he, and he's a slacker, you know, and he should be sitting up strong, and whatever. So, you know, he was a young monk. And then one night, he decided to make the snoring the focus of his mindfulness. And he said, that was the point where I started to understand what mindfulness is, and I got myself really kind of absorbed in the present moment. And that was like the door opened for him of what meditation could be, meditating on the snoring roommate. So you can do your neighbor's dog, or you can do, you know, whatever it might be. It just becomes another thing to be mindful of. And if it's no longer compelling, then you go back to the breathing. I use the word compelling a little bit out of choice, because what makes something compelling is not only the loudness of the thing, it's also our preferences in relationship to, our commentary and beliefs in relationship to it. So I've had loud noises that I got so interested in, they were so compelling, because it was disturbing my meditation. And I was so interested in it, because so compelled by it, because I was indignant, self-righteous, you know, how could they? That's what made it compelling, not the sound. And once I was able to work through that and let go of all my commentary and my reactions until a point where it was just sound, then it stopped becoming compelling. So compelling doesn't only exist in the nature of the experience, also in our preferences. In this regard, there's a teacher in Thailand who said, he talked about different experiences, it's like sound. It isn't that sounds disturb us. We disturb the sounds. Okay? So I want to do a little brief listening meditation exercise. And then we'll just a few minutes here. We're almost over. Close your eyes. And bring your attention to your head, to the space between your ears, behind your forehead. And take a few moments, like you felt the hand, to feel that area of your head. There might be pressure, vibration, softness, hardness. It could be anything, or maybe you don't feel anything. That's fine. So just hang out for a few moments with the emptiness of sensations there. Just feel a little bit your... And then as if this part of your body, like we're muscle, relax the inside of your head, soften the mind. And then allow yourself to receive the sounds around you. The sound of this bell, not so much you're trying to listen as you're allowing yourself to listen. If you find yourself thinking, let go of your thoughts so you can listen carefully, kind of like you're listening silently to a faint sound. Okay, so that's a little taste of something like that. So you can open your eyes. So what we're focusing on here with breathing, with body sensations, with sounds, are very simple sensory experiences, sensations, kind of physical, embodied things. And there's something about the simplicity of these kinds of experience that might highlight for you how you're more complicated. The commentary you have, the reactions you have, the for and against you have, the impatience you have with it, the desires you have about things. Part of the function of this mindfulness is to highlight those things so you see them clearly. And as you see them, not be caught in them. Or free yourself a little bit from the authority these things have. So part of the value of this practice is to actually notice what makes it difficult to do the practice. Does that make sense? So if you have any difficulty with this mindfulness practice, you're doing it right. Isn't that great? If you're doing it right, if you simply notice that, oh, look at that. I keep judging myself. I keep wandering off in thought. I keep resisting what's happening. That's all you're asked to do. It's not a problem from the point of view of the meditation. It's just something else to notice. And as you notice it better and better, you'll probably find that you become more relaxed, more at ease, and less pulled into, less controlled by these things, less captivated by them. And the less captivated you are, the more you'll be able to be at ease. So if you have difficulty doing the meditation, don't worry about it. It's not a problem. It's just something else to know. There's no distractions. And if that doesn't make sense to you, that's not a problem either. It'll all become clear over time. So there's a few people here, like last time, who are going through IMC's Dharma Mentor Training Program. Have done a lot of years of meditation and being trained to kind of meet with people and talk about practice. And they'll stay here. Some of you like to talk to them and chat about your experience or get clarification about any of this. Or you can talk to them, and you can talk to me if you'd like. So let's see. Maybe they can stand. So Lauren is over there, so you can see who she is. And then Sylvie is here. And Betsy, you want to stand, Betsy? And then Kate also is a manager. She's not in the program, but she is a good person to talk to. And also Sally, who's here. She's not in this program, but she teaches this stuff in the jail. And so that gives her a lot of credibility in teaching mindfulness. So you can talk to her too. And Fred. And Fred, standing in the back, is also in the program. So those are all people you can chat with, and I hope you enjoy your meditation. There is this sheet that has the homework, or the kind of reviews the instructions and some homework, or if you'd like to read about it. And look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you.